Hey folks, in this interview, we're going to be talking about Panasonic and their new full-frame mirrorless camera, the S1. Who's it for? Where does it fit in? And should you even care? This is TWiP. Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I'm your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today on the show, I've got Steve Vancek. He's a 11-year veteran wedding and portrait photographer based in the Chicagoland area, and he also happens to shoot Lumix, particularly the S1 full-frame camera that I mentioned there in the intro. We're going to dive into that camera, but before we do that, Steve, welcome to the show, man. I'm excited to talk to you. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good over here. Chicago is warm, a little rainy this season, but
that sounds like Chicago.
A few weddings.
That's Chicago. Yeah. Warm and rainy. You know, there's no humidity in Chicago, right?
Oh, man, I'll tell you. I did a doubleheader weekend over the doubleheader wedding over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And it was crazy. You know, the makeup was melting off the brides and all of that. So it kind of slows you down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey. You know, sometimes we feel like California people complain about our fires and riots and earthquakes and all that, but I wouldn't have it any other way because we have the cool weather here. So, let's start with a little bit of history on you. I'm interested to know kind of, you know, I always, when I have a new person on the show, I kind of ask them what their origin story is in photography, kind of like your Spider-Man bit by the radioactive spider.
There you go.
What got you, what was your radioactive spider that got you into photography?
Well, you know how you'll go to a photographer's website and you'll see the story about how their grandfather gifted them a camera that's been going through the years and all that. That is not me. It's not me at all. I do not have that story. Basically, I was a musician. You may see some of the things in the background. Maybe you see Fender guitars. Some
I
Bob
think I
Dylan
see Hendrix there. Up there. Is that Jimi Hendrix or is that you?
Oh, that's me.
Oh, you look like Jimi Hendrix up there. That's awesome.
It's Bob Dylan, actually.
Bob Dylan. Okay,
good. Yeah, and there's some camera stuff. There's some Fender guitars. I played music. And as a musician, as a local, you need to have a day job, you know, unless you're really, really making it, right? I had a day job that was going away. I could see it. And I wanted something creative. To become my full-time job, and I was staring down at all my music and the CDs I had and things like that, and I realized that I love the photography that I saw there, and I just hit it like crazy, learning, started listening to podcasts such as yours way back in the day, online training, and then, you know, got the camera, called up B&H. I started with Olympus DSLR. I moved on to their mirrorless. So I've shot Micro Four Thirds for a lot of years. And then it just grew to the point where I couldn't anymore I couldn't go to the day job anymore. I had to do this. So I became a full-time wedding photographer. And I'll tell you, about a year after I got into that, I got the call from some friends, and they're like, yeah, the job, they eliminated us, you know.
Oh, really? So you preempted you preempted the layoffs, right? Yeah. That's the way to go.
Yeah, the place is still there, and I know some folks there still. Yeah. You know, it took me a good 4 years to balance those two. I would run from the day job, have client meetings, change clothes, meet with people, book them, edit till midnight, go to sleep. Barely.
Yeah.
And I'd get up in the morning for the day gig and shoot the weddings on the weekends until finally I transitioned.
Yeah, that's not sustainable. Yeah. That's not sustainable. Yeah. No. Yeah. A lot of Silicon Valley people are in that sort of grind where it's slightly different, but because of the myth of the world being round, you know, they'll work during the day. And because most of these companies are international, they'll get a deluge of emails during the night. So the next morning they have to work up, you know, basically work through all the emails all day and then work all night and then get up and do it again. So it's a whole thing here. It's a whole thing.
That sounds familiar from a few years ago. And even now, you know, but I'm constantly, that's part of the job. It's very little photography.
Yeah.
When you think about it. Yeah.
Well, let's let you know this. So that we're going to, I'm going to put you on the hook for another interview because I want to dive into the business aspects of photography, particularly wedding photography with you. Mm-hmm. In this one, I want to talk about the S1, the Lumix S1, Panasonic Lumix S1 full frame mirrorless camera. Yeah, that beast, you know,
yeah.
Thor's hammer you have over there. So, you mentioned that you started with Olympus and migrated to Micro Four Thirds. Did you transition directly from Micro Four Thirds on Olympus to the full frame Lumix, or did you jump to the GH series in between, or what was your sort of path of ascension leading up to the S1?
I still shoot with Olympus and Micro Four Thirds. Mm-hmm. It's actually a great system for wedding photography that people tend to pass over, the Micro Four Thirds sensor, whether you're doing Panasonic or Olympus, because of the lightweight. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are very long days. My only familiarity with Panasonic was the Noctocron lens.
Oh, the 42.5, yeah, f1.2.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, great portrait lens. I've shot many wedding images with that. And the S1, you know, I've been looking at the full-frame mirrorless, and I started looking at all the brands. And when the Panasonic came, I'm not, like, super addicted to specs, you know. To me, handling, all these other things are important as well. Dual card slots was very important to me as a, sure, you know, a wedding shooter. And I just couldn't believe that other than Sony, nobody was offering that yet. So I started looking at the S1, and then I really fell for it. All the features that were in it as a wedding shooter, I felt that it was very much, I know they get a lot of hype for video, but I thought that the S series was really speaking to still shooters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I decided to add it to my toolbox. The lenses aren't quite there yet at this time to go all in quite.
You mean when you say the lenses aren't quite there yet, are you saying the quality of the lenses or just the selection of lenses?
Just the selection. Okay. The quality has impressed me. I started with a 24-105 f4, mm-hmm, which has been bandied about as a kit lens, and that is just not accurate. It is very much not a kit lens. It's very much a premium lens, yeah, weather sealed. It's super sharp. It's f4. As wedding photographers, we love 2.8 and faster. Mm-hmm. But the ISO of the camera, not to get too far ahead, is so good that, you know, I can shoot in churches at f4. It's not a problem whatsoever. The 50, I eventually went with that. And so I'm really rocking two lenses with it. I've rented a Leica on occasion when I've had the budget, the client's budget allowed me to. And then there's Sigma lenses come in. And like I said, I guess I'm jumping ahead, but they've got a lot more. So I'm not concerned about it. But yeah, the quality has been fantastic.
I've got one here that I'm playing with. This is not mine. It's a loaner that I have to send back to Panasonic. And I have those two lenses that you mentioned. I have the 24-105 f4 and the 50, which is 2.8, right? The 50?
1.4.
Oh, it's 1.4. Yeah, look at that. So here's the thing that struck me about that. Now, I'm lucky, right? Because I got to grab them and hang on to them for a couple of weeks. I got to send them back in about 4 days here. But that 50 millimeter lens is, they say, the most expensive 50 millimeter lens ever made, right? It's like $2,300 or something for a fixed focal length 50. Like, so is it worth that to you? You know, this is a perfect question for someone who's using it to actually generate revenue. That investment, is it paying for itself?
Yes. Yeah. It's, I've had, when I first started out with the Olympus DSLR, I had, you know, they had the 4/3 sensor. So it was like, I think I had a 30 millimeter Sigma, and, you know, I've shot with Nikon 50 millimeters. This is bar none the sharpest I've ever come across. I had a very much like I did not like 50 millimeter lenses. Everyone starts with it, you know, the plastic Fantastic or whatever, right? Yeah,
the nifty 50.
Yeah, and I would tell people, yeah, I teach like a little local photography class, and I tell people to get that because it's a cheaper way to get to a fast aperture, you mm-hmm, know, mm-hmm. And to blur those backgrounds, usually a 1.8, something like that. But I never really liked them myself, and I hadn't shot with it for years. So I got the 24 to 105. Then I went to a Lumix event like a dummy, right? You know,
yeah, I know where that's going.
Chicago, yeah, over at Dodd Camera.
Yeah.
And they had the setup there and they had the 50. And well, yeah, I don't have that lens. I'm going to have to try it, right? I'm going to have to try it, you know. I had a beautiful model set up. And that was the first time I did the IAF too, you know, because 1.4 is tough, right? You know, mm-hmm. And there were a lot of other photographers crowded around me and a lot of chitter chatter. So it wasn't like, you know, I felt a little rushed, you know, for what I was doing at 1.4. So I threw the IAF on and it was just nailing it, super sharp.
What that is for people who aren't familiar with IAF. What is IAF?
Sony's known for it. They've done a terrific job on that. It's basically you put it in the IAF and it's going to track the eye when it gets so close. I mean, you can't be 50 feet away and it's going to go to the eye. But what's unique about Panasonic is it goes from body to IAF. And if you have multiple people in the frame, you press the joystick in and you're going to be able to put a yellow box. Basically, the box changes color mm-hmm. to what you want in focus. Personally, I find it good for single or duo portraits, and that's when I'm using it for the couples, especially for the bridal portraits. Yeah. You know, what can I say? You know, these are, you know, usually young brides that I'm shooting, and they have beautiful skin. But if you soften that up even more, they are going to love you as a wedding photographer. And, you know, that's part of the deal, you know,
yeah.
It takes away, you know, blemishes and things like that, but yet keeps that our eye super, super, sharp.
Sure.
So it's cheating in a way. It's cheating at 1.4, which I can do it the old fashioned way. I've done it before, but on a run and gun wedding day, mm-hmm. it's another tool to help you out.
Insurance, right? It's yeah. insurance because you don't want to, you know, I shot a couple of weddings over the past couple mm-hmm. of decades, and the scariest thing or the most disappointing thing or one of the most disappointing things for me is when you think you got that shot and it's like, oh, look at that. The light's perfect and they're beautiful and look at the dress is flowing and I got the shot. And then you get back to the computer and zoom in and it's just a little bit soft. Right.
Right.
So if there's a tool or some AI that can help you ensure against that, you know, even if it's just a little bit, it's worth it. Right.
Right. And if the client knows you took that, what do you say?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, exactly. Hey, where's that shot of us on the bridge? I messed that up in the dark room. It didn't mm-hmm. come out.
Right. There's sharpening tools in Photoshop, but, you know, and I mean, sometimes the client won't notice. I mean, used it. I've had to do it, you know, but I prefer not to. But
sure.
when you have that super sharp eye, I think they know.
Yeah.
I think they know when you've nailed it. And then that skin smooths out. I mean, that's part of the lure of the full frame too, you know. Micro Four Thirds, I love it, you know. You have the 1.2 lenses, which gives you depth of field at 2.4, you know. But, you know, there's something about that. And when I put that 50 on, I've used it. I've done 14 weddings so far this year. And 12 of them I've had the S1 now since April. I had two February weddings before I got the system. The clients, I could tell, you know, I do in-person viewings with the clients and the bride just sees herself and I could tell, you
yeah.
know, they
yeah.
like those images with that 50, you know, and then of course, you know, I prefer a longer focal length, you know, for portraits, but you know, I'm talking about environmental portraits. I have the veil over them, just a hint of the eye there mm-hmm. and it's super sharp. So
go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's my long-winded answer to your question.
Oh, no, okay, no.
Yeah.
So, no, I was saying, so, you know, part of, and I want to get back to the camera in a second, but conventional wisdom in in wedding photography, as far as I know. I'm no expert, obviously, but the one of the mainstays seems to be that 7200 on full frame, right? And I know I have one on loan here. So the 7200 for the S1, that seems like that belongs in the wedding shooter kit. So the question is, are you planning on plunking down the cash to get one of those? Or are you going to, does that part of your wedding photography workflow, is that relegated to the Olympus side of the house?
Yeah, you know, I feel like, because you got to remember on Micro Four Thirds, 2.8 is still 2.8.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Speed of light, man. Speed of light.
Right. You know, a lot of people in online forums will battle to the death over this, but you're getting that light in. And sure, ISO, there's variance between brands and things like that. You know, I'm not all deep in the weeds on that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I know light is coming in to the sensor. I'm letting it in. I do like the 2.8. I don't have the 70-200 f4. I do plan on getting the 2.8 version. I know it's coming around the corner at some point here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is a mainstay. For me, it's mostly for the ceremonies. Okay. I go into these churches and people are running around with cell phones and iPads, but I'm put into a box in the back of the church, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, like the good altar boy that I used to be. I listen to them, right? I need that reach in the churches.
Yeah.
You know? You're absolutely correct on that. It's a mainstay.
Are you, Steve, do you see yourself in the future at any point sort of switching over from, like, completely over to the Lumix S1 full frame system and sort of eschewing the Micro Four Thirds and Olympus world? Or is it the right tool for the right job? You're going to, you know, continue to use the smaller sensors where they fit and the larger sensors where they fit. What do you think?
Great question. I've struggled with it a little bit because I kind of fell for the S1, you know.
I know the feeling, man. I've fallen in lust with that thing too. So.
Right, but you know, Olympus. You know, I've been dating Olympus for a long time. You know, right? and Micro Four Thirds. And you know, I know you're a Panasonic guy, and I think they're just sort of right there with each other. They, mm-hmm. well, they work together, you know. I mean, I know they're different companies and stuff. Their lenses are interchangeable. I think I'm going to stay there for right now because there's some times where I like that lightweight. I like to grab it and go. I'm not one of those shooters that has to have the same brand in the bag. Yeah. Or, you know, you can edit these images, and I have second shooters who come in with different brands. I have two people who work with me.
That's so refreshing hear that. Yeah, so refreshing.
Yeah, they have different brands, and no clients are saying, hey, these look different or whatever, you know. It's a different perspective. To me, it's a selling point. Hey, this photographer is going to give a little bit different look than me, a little bit different coverage. You know, usually they handle the guys, and I handle the bridesmaids, and yeah, it's not an issue.
So on the Olympus side of the house, I want to get a mm-hmm. glimpse into that kit, and then I have a couple of questions to ask you about the S1, which I'm pointing to. I got it right here. What are you shooting with on the Olympus? Are you shooting with the new gear? The OMD EM1X?
No, I'm still on OMD EM1 Mark II. Mm-hmm. I really wish they'd shorten the names.
Yeah, I know. It's hard for me. Like, yeah, give it a name like Bob, you know?
There you go. Yeah. The latest Bob, which is the EM1X, I actually went to an event for that camera. It is a terrific camera. I love the joystick. I like the battery grip. I like the body. It's the most comfortable Olympus body I've ever seen, ever held, that is. But it has a lot of AI features that are more for sports and wildlife. Mm-hmm. And I sort of withdrew from getting it. To tell you the truth, the EM1X sort of money sort of went to the S1 here.
Oh, interesting.
And that's kind of how that happened. It's a great camera. I wouldn't mind having it, but You know, I'm a bit of a tech guy too. And a lot of the features of the S1, things are going to AI and everything, you know.
Yeah.
And this was more people-oriented, where the Olympus was more, you know, if I were doing motorsports, maybe I were doing sports for kids, which I don't do, you know, or just professional sports, maybe I definitely would have went that way.
Yeah.
And this was more people-oriented. I kind of want to jump into that tech a little bit more. You know, it doesn't mean I won't go that way. You know, and one of my second shooters also shoots Olympus. And then one of my other second shooters who works in my company has a Sony.
Yeah. So yeah, Olympus makes some fantastic, fantastic cameras. In fact, I have one here that I'm testing as well. Both of those, the 1X and the Mark II that you have. I'm testing both of those. Olympus was gracious enough to send over a full kit with all that stuff in it for me to play with. Of course, I still have to send that back too. But you know, it's like purgatory. I get to play with all this cool stuff, but then it has to go back. So on that, one of the things that I noticed, even holding the, you know, my current flagship camera is the G9, the Lumix G9. That's my baby, right? Mm-hmm. So the Lumix G9, and I say that before having played with the Olympus stuff, it's still in the box. But you have the G9 and then the S1, which to me, looking at both of those cameras together, you could see the, it's almost like that profile evolution of man poster, right? It's like, yeah. It's like, here's the G9. And then the next step is this thing. It looks, all the DNA is very similar, only mm-hmm. it's bigger, it's stronger, it's faster in many ways and higher resolution, all this stuff. The question to you is, so bouncing back and forth between these systems, the main thing that I noticed when holding these two cameras together, Micro Four Thirds and full frame, is the heft of the S1. Yeah. And I'll say, let me before you answer, I want to get your opinion on that heft, but before you answer, it was to me, and I said this in the TWIP Pro forum, it initially when I saw the S1, I think it was at WPPI in Vegas. And I had seen some prototypes before then, but the first production one I saw at WPPI, and I was on stage in the Panasonic booth talking and emceeing and all that, and my first impression was, that's not for me. That thing is gigantic. I'm never going to shoot with that. That feels like going back to my old Nikon days with the D3 and all that stuff. So I'm happy with my smaller G9. So I kind of pushed it off to the side of my brain. I was reading reviews and all that. Panasonic sent one over for me to play around with. And it's interesting. I'm trying to stay this and not sound like a fanboy. But it's interesting that the synapses in my brain that lit up were those of familiarity from the days of actually being unapologetically a photographer versus I'm stealthy and you don't know that I'm shooting real photography because my camera is so small and, you know, all that stuff and kind of apologizing for being a photographer without saying it. When you go outside with this S1 with even that 50 mil lens on it, you're a photographer. Everyone knows that you are. You've made an investment at least, and you are unapologetically a photographer, and you ain't afraid to hide it. What are your thoughts on that? You know, the heft and the size difference, and the, you know, kind of the move away from smaller is better, and be an undercover stealthy street photographer. What do you think?
To touch on your, look, a photographer is coming into the room, you know, yeah. With the big camera.
Yeah.
You know, you and I are in the United States, and mm-hmm. people in America like things big.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? That's true.
I drive down the street and like these tiny, you know, trucks are on gigantic tires everywhere, you know, and especially in the Midwest, you know.
Yeah, of course. Well, there's space to drive those. Right?
I mean, I'm close to Chicago here, right? But yeah. I start getting in other areas, you know, and people are mudding and doing all that kind of stuff, right?
Right,
so I guess that works for them, you know. I still get that out here. You know, it happened over this weekend, you know, dads and uncles come up and they want to start talking gear with me when they see the big stuff, you know. But I do have to say, you know, just because I started with Olympus, I started with their DSLR, which was just as big as, you know, those Nikon D3s that you're talking about. It's like the same era, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but it had the crop sensor, you know. And when I started out, I didn't know anything about full frame or that. I just called up B&H and said, hey, I got X amount of dollars. What do you got for me? Nice. And I want to be professional at some point. And I had two cameras in mind. One was an Icon, one was an Olympus. I said, what's got the most professional features? And they recommended an Olympus camera to me. So I got it and took off from there and started investing in the lenses. And then when they eventually went to the Micro Four Thirds, you know, I jumped over and I just started doing with the smaller camera engagement sessions only. But I had my two bigger DSLRs for, you know, the real jobs, right? You know, and and then I was looking, I was like, man, this quality is great. And the client loved it. And so I started migrating over, you know. Mm-hmm. So the thing with the S1 is, I mean, there are tricks up the sleeve to a bigger sensor and those full frame lenses, and you just can't get around that size.
Yeah, it's optics, right? Yeah, it's just physics, optics, all that.
Right. So, you know, do you want to add those little tweaks to your look? Mm-hmm. And as a wedding photographer, some of those looks that you can get on the big sensor are important because it's a very competitive market, you know, and you want to be able to give certain looks to clients who want that. And at the same time, I need to be on my feet for 12 hours. So it's mm-hmm. great to say, hey, I'm going to put this one away now and I'm going to grab this smaller body.
That was the other part of the question there, because, you know, you are the perfect person to talk to about this, because running around shooting as many weddings as you do, every ounce starts to matter around 8 o'clock at night, right? you start feeling it in that L3 or whatever back there, you know, you're right. And you're like, oh, you know, okay, I'm just going to grab the smaller camera, you know? So does that part affect you? Cause there's the loadout, right? There's the psychological piece of it when, like, we talk about the being unapologetically a photographer, right? That's okay, I'm a photographer. But then there's the, you know, I'm getting ready to go out and, yeah, I may take a photo, but I really don't want to lug that giant bag with Thor's hammer in it and a bunch of lenses. Yeah. Maybe I'll just take the smaller one this time. Does that thinking ever enter into your psyche?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You mentioned 8 o'clock. Try 5 o'clock, you know, where it starts weighing down on you, right?
Yeah.
You know, what I'm doing is I have a very, very comfortable strap system. I'm not plugging anybody. I'm not sponsored by anybody, but I use Holdfast Gear, which is an expensive, a camera strap system. And, but it's all leather, it looks good. And it really takes the weight off my back, because I had to think about this S1. I didn't just jump into it for those reasons. I always say my clients tend to stay the same age, and then I tend to get older for some reason. I don't know what's happening, you know? I have to run after 23-year-olds, and I know that's going to sound weird, but you know what I mean.
They've
got the energy, so I need to match that energy. And then with two big cameras on me, you know, I will put it away at certain times of the day. And then also for the getting ready portion too, you can take a smaller camera system out and not intimidate them when they first meet you, you know, as well. So, you know, if anybody was like starting or wanting to up their, you know, to go from a kit system, I'd have no problem saying, hey, you know, they could do, like, you have a G9, they could do a G9, and then they could have a full frame system too if they wanted. Or they, you know, for years I shot with Micro Four Thirds and built my business on it. Yeah. And no client ever talked about noise in the photos or anything like that. You know, you have to know how to shoot in that system, though. You can't just underexpose and expect to take your exposure slider or cider all the way to the white and to the right, and everything's going to be good, you know. So there's that, and then I also think those smaller sensors will teach you about light. It kind of forces you not to just shoot everything wide open.
That's right. You know, that's right.
And try to force things at weddings. So yeah, just what tool do you want today? What tool do you want for certain situations? And at engagement sessions, it's great as well, you know, to get the smaller one maybe, you know.
It's almost like in terms of the gear that you pick, it's almost like an exposure triangle, right? With you know, where at one point of that triangle, it's how much money do you have to invest?
Yeah.
One of them is what kind of photography are you shooting? And then, you know, how much weight are you willing to carry? And you know, what or how serious are you? You could do the math and it should point to a particular kind of brand of camera or series of cameras. So yeah, no, it's interesting. So here's a question for you, Steve. There's one thing on this camera, and folks that are listening, I'm holding up the S1. This LCD, the LCD that they put on the back, which is kind of like Sony. And it's not, and this is particularly of interest to hear from you on this, because you come from the Olympus side, Micro Four Thirds, with that articulated LCD, the fully articulated, you can face it forward, up, down, left, right, whatever. It's on a swivel. This one is not. It's restricted in its ranges of motion. Has that affected you at all, or do you not use the camera the same way, or do you even care about the viewfinder?
Well, I care about the viewfinder, but the LCD itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, the LCD itself.
Yeah, yeah. I care about that too, but not in the way that you just described. I'm not vlogging, you know. I don't really think I would want to vlog with the S1 because it is a big, hefty camera.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I could see it for certain interview things, but they have other cameras that are suited to that. On my OMD EM1 Mark II on the Olympus, it does have that articulated screen. You can flip it out every which way. I like it for closing it up on itself. So when I pack it into the bag, I close it up, and the LCD I know is not going to get scratched or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So on the S1, I don't have that option, but I have a nice ThinkBag that I put it in, so, and I'm careful with my gear, so it doesn't bother me at all as a still shooter. I heard a lot of hubbub about it, but yeah, I didn't even think about that, didn't consider it for my purchase. But the electronic viewfinder, though, that was one of the selling points for me on
it's
the
S1. It's brilliant, isn't it? It's hard to say. It's hard to put into words, but it is very close to, if not beyond, reality, right? So, like what you would see in an optical viewfinder, I would argue that it's better because you have a higher resolution and then you have data on top of it, right? So, how do you feel about it? Is it like what do you like about the viewfinder portion?
Yeah, you know, luckily my eyes are still good. You know, I mean, but age gets you, and you know, and those things happen. So I was worried about eye fatigue as, you know, as the years approach. I don't want to look for another job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I built this business up over these years. I want this to be the one that carries me through. So I need to take care of myself, not only, you know, physically to be able to lift these cameras and walk and do all that other good stuff, but I want to be able to have good eyesight and not, you know, we're staring at screens all the time, our computers, our phones. And then now that we're moving into mirrorless, I love tech, but I'm staring at another computer screen in my camera for 12 hours at a wedding. So I want it to be good and great, actually. And that's what this is. And then for those folks who are like shooting DSLR still, and they're like, hey, I want one of these mirrorless cameras. It's the future. I can see it. I need to move on. I don't want to, you know, be left back, all of that. This is the viewfinder to have, because you will feel like it's an optical viewfinder. But like you said, with all the bells and whistles that mirrorless brings. Yeah. And then you've got the exposure in your eye, which has been around in mirrorless since the beginning. But the S1's got some other tricks, like I shot a bridal portrait session in Chicago with the L train up above, and I shot it at very slow shutter speed, so the IBIS is great in it. I shot it at 1/8 of a second handheld. I had to have her still, of course, but I saw the train blurring as it went above, and I was like, you know, I don't like that blur. Let me slow it down a little bit more. I could just see the blur of the train live in my eye. And I got that shot done very quickly because those trains don't last too long, you know?
Right.
And within a couple of seconds, I had my shot.
That's great. You know? Yeah.
And it, you know, when I got into the computer, it's exactly what I saw in my eye. I was done, you know?
Yep.
And you know, that portrait session, it was one of those deals where she puts on the dress and we go out. So we didn't have the pressure of the wedding day, but on wedding days to have that option when I need to get somewhere very fast, we're always on the go. There's always a wardrobe malfunction or a limo driver who's late or whatever,
life,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
Life. Yeah. Wedding day life. And it always falls down on her, you know, because we've got to get these shots no matter what. So any little edge that I can get, you know, I want on wedding day, and the mirrorless cameras bring that to the table.
I love it. I love it. Well, Steve, thank you so much for being candid today and, and talk about your workflow and letting us get a glimpse into the world of an active shooter, wedding photographer that's shooting both Micro Four Thirds and full frame and loving it.
Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah, people think that's crazy, but, you know, yeah. And it's great being here. I always equate this to a long time ago when I bought a computer, I went to the Apple store back in the day, mid-2000s. And then you had these T-shirts at the Apple store that said, I could talk about this stuff all day.
Yeah.
Right. And they were, and that's what led me to buy the computer, because I didn't know jack about computers. You know, I had a Dell ad in my hand, you know, and I was like, well, these specs seem to be better. And the girl's like, oh, but the Apple brings this creativity and all this stuff, you know. And I was like, and then I saw the T-shirt and I said, all right, I'm going to get a Mac, you know, but not to start that war. But
yeah, that's a whole nother war right there.
Yeah, that's true. But they had that T-shirt, and that's how I feel about photography. You know, like I could just talk about this stuff all day. So here we are.
I love it. Yeah. Well, cool. Well, Steve, if people want to check out some of the work that you're doing with the S1 and or, you know, get in contact with you about your wedding photography or other endeavors, what's a good place for them to point their browsers to?
Regionweddings.com. That's all one word, R-E-G-I-O-N, weddings.com. And I'm sure there's tons of brides watching Camera Gear podcast, Frederick, and I know they're going to be calling me.
You never know.
But yeah, if they want to see the work I'm doing with the S1, they should probably go to my journal page, which is my blog, and that has the latest work, because obviously it's only been out since April. So if you go back to the blog post from April of this year, you'll see S1 images along with the Olympus images and all that other good stuff. And and previous to that, you'll see a hodgepodge of all the different tools I've used over the years. But yeah, if they're interested in the S1 stuff, they'll see it there.
Very cool. Well, Steve Antic, thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah. Great talking with you. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome.
Been watching for a long time.
All right. We'll meet in person in Chicago someday, man.
That's right. We'll shoot.
We'll meet again, because we met at the Out of Chicago conference, but we have to re-meet now that we're both shooting the S1. At least me temporarily, maybe permanently. We'll see, right?
So, oh, yeah. All right. Cool. Yeah.
Okay. All right, man. Take care. Have a good rest of your day.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
This is Twitter.